Dave, 651, and our friend Chuck Todd joins us. Where in the world are you today?
Right now, New York City.
And the Super Tuesday debate tonight is on for... Somebody yelling at you in the background?
No, I know. It's the train station.
Ah, got it. No worries. The Super Tuesday debate tonight, there continues to be this question of whether or not Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz will go after each other or go after Trump. Don't they kind of have to go after Trump at this point?
I know the Marco Rubio strategy is that this is Ted Cruz's problem, not theirs yet. And, you know, this is about just waiting it out. But I think, though, you cannot win unless you beat the guy that's winning.
Right.
And, look, I think Marco Rubio, look, the establishment has not rushed to Marco Rubio. You know, he gets a trickle of endorsements every day. He gets a little more money every day. But there's a hesitance. And guess what it is? It's a fear from some of these donors that Rubio isn't tough enough, that if they rally around him and Rubio has his lunch money taken the way Christie took it from Trump, then some of these people will say, geez, this is the third different candidate I've backed who's lost to Trump. You know, I'm done. I'm tired of this. So, look, I think the pressure's on Rubio tonight. I know that he has got the attitude that this is a Cruz problem, not a Rubio problem tonight. But I think this is Rubio's chance to show he can be the nominee. And if he doesn't show that he can take on Trump and be the big dog on that stage, if he can't do it tonight, when is he going to do it?
Yeah,
if he can't do it tonight, it's over.
It's getting very late. And we've heard a lot of conversation on the Democrat side about Michael Bloomberg possibly getting in if Bernie Sanders develops that esteem. He's lost a little bit of that steam about Vice President Biden potentially getting in. If that's the case, if there's not a chance that Hillary Clinton has this thing sewn up, if she's developed more momentum. You brought up something Tuesday on the Today Show, which is fascinating, and that's that Mitt Romney may be waiting in the wings. And then Romney yesterday threw in a little tax bomb on Trump. So what's the background on this?
Well, look, there are a whole bunch of Republicans. I don't know if you've seen the Washington Post this morning, lead editorial, that basically begs the Republican Party leaders, you know, history will not look kindly on you if you stay silent on Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is Romney's way of not staying silent. And, you know, this is he's hoping against hope that there's something that can blow up Trump. But if you're, you know, how good, that's nice that you want to be anti-Trump, but Mitt Romney could help Marco Rubio today if he would endorse Marco Rubio and get out there and start campaigning for him and get out there and make the case against Trump and get out there and make the case for Rubio. So, look, I the Stop Trump movement has been more talk than action. And it's been 9 months of talk and 9 months of inaction. And they've all looked around, and everybody that claims that they're going to stop Trump, they've all looked around at everybody else saying, okay, you do it. And nobody has wanted to do it. And this inaction has now led them to the precipice of about to nominate this guy. And it's going to change the Republican Party for a generation. And that's more likely to be a bad thing, not a good thing for the party. Maybe I'm wrong, but the way I look at it is it's likely to be an historic moment that they're going to regret.
Chuck, how would that happen, though? Say Mitt Romney decides, you know what, I'm going to jump in. Can he at this point? How does that even work? Same with the Democrats if a Bloomberg jumped in.
Yeah, there's a few late filing deadlines. So basically what you'd be doing is, this was the way it was done in the you know, 20s, 30s, and 40s. You'd have these what were called favorite son candidacies. So you get somebody who's popular in a state literally just to win delegates so that you deny the front-runner delegate, so that you create a brokered convention situation. So the idea is this: Romney might file in the California primary, win a bunch of delegates in California as a late entry, whatever it takes to deny Trump a majority, a first ballot majority going in. And of course, once you deny the first ballot, then, you know, it's anybody's game. It's no longer, no delegate is bound. At that point, it is, you know, a scrum on the floor of the convention. So that's the theory of the case, but I have to say, it's pretty far-fetched. We don't do this. You know, we don't have smoke-filled rooms. Maybe we have vape-filled rooms. I don't know.
Yeah, and it could be wishful thinking on my part because you know what a fan of Trump I am. But having said that, nothing has gone the way we expected it from last year to this year, even six right. months ago to now. So it just feels like anything's possible. But on the Republican side, look, I've met Mitt Romney. I like Mitt Romney. But Mitt Romney lost. And Mitt Romney has a similar DNA, at least to the general voter looking at him, that Donald Trump is. He's a rich guy. Well, they like the rich guy Trump better than they like the rich guy Romney. So how does Romney come in? I know they're very different people, but how does Romney come in and have the Republican Party go, well, that's our guy?
I don't know if it's about him or if it's just anti-Trump.
Right.
I mean, that's what betting would be. I would argue what Mitt Romney is just another version of Jeb Bush.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's more of that, you know.
That's true.
Sort of the patrician rich guy who plays by – who's a gentleman who plays by rules, plays by an agreed set of decorum and rules and things like that. Obviously, Trump doesn't play by an agreed upon set of rules. So, but you know, this is not about Romney somehow being able to win. It is almost all about if there is the appetite for Stop Trump. What's befuddling to me is how little appetite you have. Donors. He has bullied the party. You have donors that all claim they don't want Trump, but they're afraid to donate to anti-Trump causes for fear that Trump will call them out. And
yeah,
you just sit here and say, guess what? Look in the mirror, and you're going to ask yourself the question, what were you doing when you had the chance to stop Donald Trump?
Yeah, it's gutless.
And that's this Washington Post editorial. That's this Washington Post editorial of the day. And that's it. Look, I say this, and some people say, oh, the media has enabled Trump. I tell you, the media has also provided all the ammunition for the fodder that's out there that a normal campaign against a normal political candidate would work. The Republican Party has refused to engage in any campaign against Trump. More negative ads have aired against John Kasich than Donald Trump.
Yeah, how about that?
Give me a break.
How about that?
You know,
well
that's
said.
A malpractice. It is campaign malpractice. And the Republican Party, you get the nominee that you got if you don't fight them, and they're not fighting them.
No, it's well said by you. A completely gutless move. Meet the Press Sunday from the home studio.
You got it, home studio, Post South Carolina. We love these Saturday night results. It's good for the bloodstream on Sunday morning.
Plenty to talk about. Thank you, Chuck. Talk to you soon.
All right, brother. Thanks, Steve.
That's Chuck Todd, live from from Grand Central, literally in New York City. As he goes from wherever he's going to wherever he's got to be. I hope he doesn't have to be to the Today Show in 5 minutes. I don't think he takes a train to the Today Show. He's a Grand Central. He's taking a train to 30 Rock. Be like taking a train from Union Station to the Hancock. Well, he's Chuck. Maybe he needs to do that. It's a minute before 7. Let's take a break, come back, get to the news in a moment. And then we'll get into some politics of local, statewide, and national nonsense, all coming up on 720 WGN. Rick Pearson, Eric Edelstein, Pat Brady, all join me in a moment. Yesterday morning, right after the show, got an opportunity to talk to Senator Mark Kirk, who made a bunch of news this week, in part because he said the Republicans ought to do their constitutional duty on the Supreme Court. But we started the conversation with how he feels about the president's move on potentially closing, finally, Guantanamo Bay.
It doesn't conform with the law. When I was first elected to the Senate, I got locked in the most recent defense bill, a prohibition on transferring the al-Qaeda core to America. The danger of that is once they come to U.S. soil, they get complete U.S. constitutional rights, and they all lawyer up. I think keeping those guys on ice away from ability to kill another 3,000 Americans is the way to go.
It also puts, as far as I'm concerned, look, our supermax facilities can handle them from a prisoner standpoint, but it also puts the communities in a very bad spot.
I'll disagree with you. Supermax is in the United States. If they came to supermax, they would get access to U.S. lawyers. There would be tons of U.S. lawyers lining up to represent them.
Oh no, I don't discount that. I'm saying it's not this. My comment is not a knock on the prisons here and their ability to handle them. What I'm saying is, in addition to what you've mentioned, it's also unfair to those communities to bring these murderous terrorist thugs to those areas.
There's another problem. When the Obama administration briefed me on their plan to move the al-Qaeda core to Illinois, I said, "You're going to allow relatives to come and visit, right?" And they said yes. I said, so we're going to have Osama bin Laden's relatives coming through O'Hare Airport to visit the Thompson facility. And I don't think that's a risk we should take.
No, the whole thing is fraught with trouble. So where do we go from here? What do you see happening?
At this point, the president is headed towards a real legal conundrum. And he doesn't have the authority under law to transfer these guys to the United States if he tries to close the facility. The problem that he has right now is the average soldier, the G.I. Joe out there, won't know what to do if they capture a key, what we call an HVT, high-value terrorist. There's got to be some place where you can put him.
And this is something...
If Guantanamo's closed, you want to make sure that they are not just released. If they're caught on the battlefield, we need to make sure there's some hot news coming up that I'll be raising the question with Secretary Kerry up coming up about the Sudanese release of a terrorist named Ibrahim al-Kosi.
Mm-hmm.
This is the troubling policy of the administration to release terrorists to terrorists. Al-Kosi was theoretically released to the custody of the Sudanese, and he is now appearing on al-Qaeda videos, recruiting people to attack the United States again.
Yeah, and this is where prisoner swaps and things of that nature become really, really dicey. Now, the other big news of the last couple of weeks, which you've been, very noteworthy in. And by the way, we're lucky in Illinois, and when it comes to politics in Illinois, we rarely say this, but we're lucky in Illinois in that you and Senator Durbin have a pretty productive working relationship. Obviously, you have differences.
I wanted to make sure after I got out of the hospital, I thought long and hard about this, that I thought about the title on my ID card says, Mark Kirk representing Illinois, and make sure every time I go to the Senate floor, it just makes sense to work with the guy who has also got the same title.
That's a good point.
To make sure that if Kirk and Durbin are two horses, they could be pulling the same wagon called the state of Illinois faster and better if they don't snipe at each other. If the two horses are always nipping at each other, they're not going to pull the wagon that far that fast.
And that's what brings me to the Scalia story, because here's the deal. We both know that if the situation were reversed, there'd be plenty of Democrats asking what too many of the Republicans are asking right now. But what we also know, and what you're bringing up, is that there must be a presidential appointment of a nominee, a fair nominee, and the Senate must advise and consent, because that's what the Constitution asks for.
Correct. We need to follow the Constitution here and make sure the president follows his duty to nominate somebody, and the Senate follows its duty to provide advice and consent on that nominee. We have a very weird situation. This is kind of like the old medieval battles, when the two armies would draw up and look at each other. And right now we don't have a nominee to even talk about, so you can't start the process. Since we don't have a name out there.
Right, but without starting the process, and this has been my point throughout, the Republicans in the Senate itself holds the power here to give fair hearing to the individual that the president brings up. In other words, the president brings up that somebody that feels tremendously liberal, you give them a fair hearing, and then you stand in front of the American people and you say why this is a bad idea and not fair for all Americans. By not doing anything, the party just appears to be obstructionist.
Let me give you my philosophy on this. I'm looking for the best legal scholar who can defend that key role of the Supreme Court in our life. The Supreme Court is the last defense of that core of our freedom. The reason why the United States is the best country on earth is because we have more freedom than most countries. You depend on the Supreme Court in the vicissitudes of ups and downs of the changing economy, like the internet, where we have Apple versus the FBI,
right?
Where you got to litigate the new issues, make sure that we find a jurist who can preserve that key expanding space of freedom that you have.
Based on what Leader McConnell said yesterday, do you believe there are any cracks in this that could be, again, once the president brings a name forward, do you believe that your fellow Senate Republicans could see the light on this?
Right now, it is not moving forward. It can only move forward if the president gives us a name and a person.
Right.
He has that thick binder he's been walking around the White House with. I would hope that he would come forward with a name, and we could see if this jurist was a competent judge and a real outstanding legal scholar.
But you're optimistic, I hope, anyway.
I would hope that he would come forward with a name, and we can't even start the process without a name.
All right, but you're on the record, obviously, saying you think that the president's name should be fairly judged by the Senate.
I think we can we should perform our duty.
Right.
He has a role to perform under the Constitution, and so do we. We should stick to the Constitution.
Now let me take you off the job of the day, and let's talk about the campaign for reelection. What do you want the voters of Illinois to know?
The key difference between me and Tammy Duckworth is that she has signed on to this plan to bring 200,000 Syrian refugees to America. I don't. That's 20 times the proposal of the administration. I don't think that's responsible. We already have, the administration has told us, from the director of national intelligence and the director of the FBI, saying they don't have the information to properly vet these people. We got to make sure that we move in a way that 3,000 Americans are not killed again in another 9/11.
KirkForSenate.com, by the way, is the website for that campaign. And thank you, Senator Kirk. And the entire interview will be up in a matter of minutes, along with this entire political hour, which we do every week. Where, Ross?
WGNRadio.com, the TuneIn app, the WGN Radio app, iTunes. You can subscribe on iTunes like I do. But anywhere podcasts are available.
Rick Pearson will join us in a moment from your Chicago Tribune. But before we get, and of course, the Sunday Spin here. Rick Pearson joins us now at 7:23 on the Steve Cochran Show, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Rick is your host for the Sunday Spin. Who are your guests this weekend?
I've got Brad Cole. He's head of the Illinois Municipal League, and the cities are seeking some important legislation out of Springfield. I've also got State Representative Lou Lang, a top Democrat in the House, as we talk about seeing if there's any way to wander through the impasse.
Is there any impasse news this week? Granted, I'm awfully excited about the governor not using email, but is there something other than that going on?
Well, there might be some movement going on as far as higher education. There's a lot of back and forth about proposals to try to get some money to these institutions of higher education. We, of course, have the news that Chicago State University, they canceled spring break. They've accelerated their schedule because they're basically all but out of money, and they're trying to get degrees and complete the school year. So that has kind of amped up things. And, of course, it's that problem with Chicago State that's one of the reasons that Bernie Sanders is using Chicago State as a place to hold a rally tonight.
Who's running the Sanders campaign? Because, you know, to take a guy who is out there in so many different ways and to form the campaign they've done, it's been pretty impressive.
It is, and you know, they're one of their real strengths is their ability to be able to tap into these donors. They're small dollar donors, and so they're able to go back to that well and raise even more money. And of course, having, you know, getting support with the youth vote shows their adept, their prowess at using social media.
Outside of the state, let's come back to the city for a second. It's been, again, fairly quiet out of the mayor's office. What's going on there?
Well, I mean, we're kind of in a sit-back position. The mayor's office did release a trove of emails last night regarding that latest police shooting, police-involved shooting. And it shows that unlike the Laquan McDonald situation, the mayor seemed to be much more hands-on and try to be aware of what was going on. And also, of course, the emails also show his concerns with how the media was portraying things.
It's a fascinating thing, isn't it? We talk about this a little bit off the air, but Rahm's fascination with the media and his incredible avoidance of the media shouldn't be two things that go together. And I always go back to Giuliani as an example when I was in New York and he was the mayor. And Giuliani would be at your door when the show started. Hey, can I come on today? And Rahm is just always monitoring the media at every turn, according to these texts and emails we've seen. But he'll avoid interviews at all costs. I don't know how those two click.
Well, you know, it's one thing. He was very adept in Washington of tapping into the media and oftentimes holding you know, off the record court situations for reporters. But he still, I think, has more concerns about how the national media portrays them than perhaps the local media does.
Hmm. Yeah, he's an interesting fella. See what I did there? Rick Pearson's in your Chicago Tribune, online at chicagotribune.com, finest political writer in America and host of the Sunday Spin. We're going to get into the candidate stuff in the national race with Eric and Pat here in a second as well. But we know that Bernie Sanders is coming to town to do that speech that was referenced. Does that mean, and are you hearing from any people that, you know, the South Carolina thing, he's going to worry about the delegate count and not the win or the loss?
He is going back to South Carolina on Friday, but the fact of the matter is much of his schedule is really focused on a longer-term game, looking at the Super Tuesday states. South Carolina is not a favorable state for him. It'd also be very curious with the number of these states in Super Tuesday that are southern states, how well his message plays there. But he's certainly looking ahead. He's looking at Illinois. He's looking at Ohio. He's looking at Michigan as possible victories. But he does need to get some momentum going. There's no doubt about that, because Hillary has racked up the superdelegates. And there's a lot of delegates to be had in the next couple of weeks.
One last thing before I let you go. There was a fascinating photo that emerged of Bernie Sanders being arrested back in the '60s in the Tribune archives at a civil rights protest. And is there an easy way to explain how that photo turns up? Is that something where Bernie says, hey, I remember getting arrested, the Chicago Tribune should have the picture, and then they call and, you know, pay for an archive search? Or how does that work?
No, actually, this was done internally by our own archival folks, because he had referenced his role being in protest while he was at the University of Chicago. And, of course, Sanders needing to try to get some support from the African-American community away from Hillary Clinton, you know, that's it's a topic of discussion. So it really was an internal search that we did.
That was impressive, you know. And it caused me to think about the hidden history that's got to be in the photo archives at the Tribune, let alone in all the, you know, the writing for the last 150 years. It's pretty crazy, right?
No, it is. And in fact, we're trying to do much more to make use of that archive, and particularly online with the digital photo galleries.
Nice work by everybody there. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
At Rap30, R-A-P-3-O. That's also Rick's rap name. And it's Rick Pearson, host of the Sunday Spin. Host of the Sunday Spin. What? Oh, yeah, okay. Should you worry about identity theft during tax season? Yep, the IRS reported over $6 billion in fraudulent refunds in a single year due to identity theft. Does it matter if you're not getting a refund? Does it? Does it matter? Doesn't matter. Answer that question, young lady. No.
It shouldn't matter.
No, because here's what happens is your tax return is filed, and they can still steal all the important data off it and take your stuff. And then they get a refund based on you, in a lot of cases, that you should have gotten. And then you go, where's my refund? And the IRS goes, we already paid you. Oh, such a mess.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Pat Brady's here, Next Generation Strategies, and Eric Adelson's here. Eric, what is your company called again, if you would remind us?
It's AL Media.
All right, then. You know, a question came up the other day, which I thought was kind of interesting. Is Hillary Clinton a better candidate, and I ask both of you guys this, with or without competition? In other words, if Bernie Sanders goes away, is she a better candidate or not as strong?
Well, I actually think she does better when she's an underdog. I think the speech she gave conceding New Hampshire was maybe one of the best speeches she's given, because she seemed human, she seemed vulnerable, and I think, you know, a lot of times when you're high achieving and as accomplished as she is, there's a perception that you're sort of untouchable. And I think, for putting aside all the politics and the hits and all that, but I think ultimately you want to connect as a human being, and sometimes when you're an underdog, you connect better as a human being. So I think she does better with competition. I think she did better when Obama pressed her. Obviously, she came very close, didn't come out on the right end of that. I think she's a better candidate with Sanders pushing her.
And is it better for Republicans? That's really a strange sentence in this world. Is it better for Republicans to have Sanders still in the race for a long period of time?
Sure. It makes Hillary dive more to the left, which she's had to do on policy. Yeah, that's good for us as long as he is there. And I think Secretary Clinton might be the world's greatest actress.
Well, the Oscars are this weekend.
The Oscars are this week. I mean, she hasn't driven a car in 20 years, and it's tough for her to identify with comedy.
Well, the problem, Pat, is she's appealing to blacks. She's not actually black, so it doesn't change the Oscars argument. Ooh. So we still have that.
Do you guys find, I just, my observations throughout all of this have been that there's more, I guess, unity on the Democratic side. For example, if Hillary gets the nomination, that Bernie will say, oh, okay, yeah, yeah, however he'll say it, and throw his support behind her, where there's more dissent or discord on the Republican side with the name calling and the, you're a liar and you're a putz and you're in this. You know, it just doesn't.
Putz is a word I'd like to hear tonight. That's the one.
Especially
that
Bernie.
Can Bernie
say that?
Side.
Bernie would say it best.
Bernie yeah, could say it. Bernie could deliver does. It. Bernie but, could sell it.
But with all the name, I mean, I just find such a lack of unity, and especially if Trump gets the nominee. Don't you see that bad? Just such a lack of a rallying cry around the party.
Listen, everybody, don't panic. We did not give up when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor.
7 years of college down the drain.
That's his.
But no, it's not a good right now. It's not a good period for the Republicans. And I agree with Chuck Todd that Marco Rubio and Governor Kasich have an opportunity tonight to show that they need or should be commander in chief, and they need to confront Donald Trump.
Well, it creates an interesting problem for Kasich, right? Because Kasich's saying, let's not yell at each other. Let's ascribe to the old Reagan rule. But if John Kasich doesn't turn into the tough guy from Ohio tonight, he's done.
Yeah, but you can do it without being a jerk. And Reagan was very effective with it. You can use humor. You can use a smile on your face. But there is plenty of material. And if Marco Rubio wants to be commander-in-chief, he's got to prove to a lot of donors, again, like Chuck Todd said, who have that memory of Chris Christie eviscerating him in the New Hampshire debate, that I'm up to the task, and that means I can put my brain and my mouth together enough to take out this idiot. And he's got to do it tonight, I think.
Yeah, I think you said it best a while ago on the show when you described it as someone needs to take a shot to his head, a direct political shot at Trump.
I cannot repeat that line because some of the tweets I got, I didn't realize that my head would fit in my backside.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, according to these people that have been
tweeted. Well, you know, that brings up a larger question, too, for both of you. Have we reached a point because of the lack of civility and the lack of general decency, and I say this as a talk show host, that we can't have a campaign of grown-ups anymore, that the loudest kid in the room is always going to get the most attention?
Well, I don't want to sound like the historian, but the amplification makes it that the case, Steve. But the things that were said in the 19th century and the 18th century...
They're pretty awful. They just took a while to get to your door.
Pretty awful. It just took 6 months for everyone to see that they called, you know, Abraham Lincoln an ape and, the N-word lover and all the horrible, horrible things that were said. The stuff about, you know, they called Adams a hermaphrodite who couldn't be trusted with, you know, has the worst of the female and the male trait. You know,
they used to duel. They used to shoot
each other. Yeah, they shoot each other. So, you know, I just think it's the amplification. And now people are really courageous when they're sitting behind a computer or behind an anonymous name.
And a screen name,
And a screen name. So, you know, look, to Rubio, he's got to win somewhere. And I think I agree with Pat. I don't think it's over yet. I think there's going to be, you said it, Steve, a bunch more twists and turns. I don't think this thing's predictable at all. I think his biggest problem is you got three major prizes coming up. You got Florida, Ohio, and Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And Florida, you know, that's a great opportunity for Rubio to win somewhere. Ohio and Texas, he should do well there, but he's got these blockers sitting there with Cruz and Kasich.
Yep.
That are a huge problem for him.
Yep.
If they were out
of the
picture,
it's tight there right now in Texas.
It is. It's tight in Texas. But without Cruz in it, I think Rubio would have a great chance to win there.
Yes.
So, you know, this is going to be an interesting dynamic in the next 3 weeks, and I think we're going to know a whole lot more about whether this is going to be a two-man fight or whether Trump's going to roll with it.
Illinois is going to be key, too. I think that's the fourth of the big states in the next couple of weeks.
Well, speaking of it not being over, there's been this talk since South Carolina and the primary for South Carolina is still to come, obviously, this weekend for the Democrats, that Hillary's on a roll after Nevada and Bernie, it was a fun ride and it's done. A little early for that, isn't it?
A little bit, although I think, you know, either the Clinton campaign was masterful in underplaying expectations in Nevada or they were truly surprised. I talked to a lot of people in that camp. I think they thought they were going to lose Nevada.
Is that right?
I do, yeah. I think they were really scared about it. And I don't think it was just an expectations game. I think they were preparing people for it's okay, we got a firewall in South Carolina. So you can't really understate the importance both in her psyche and the psyche of the party and her winning there. I mean, right now you've got Sanders is one in one place, which is basically the neighboring state to his own state. So for all the enthusiasm and stuff, the problem is he's got a lot of money and he can be around a long time even if he isn't winning races.
He's an effective messenger, too.
And a very effective messenger. And, he's been consistent and he's fired up a lot of people and created some energy. The question becomes, you know, everyone said it, can he win among non-white populations. I would say I've seen some research where, look, there's resonance to his message, taking on the powerful. You know, the game's rigged. It's not a fair fight. That's a message that to an African American audience and Hispanic audience to some extent has some resonance. But you know, she's done, I think, some very powerful communicating with the mothers of some of the victims of the mm-hmm. police violence, some of the civil rights champions that have said she's been part of this fight for a long, long time, isn't a newcomer to it. So, you know, I think
how come she never got arrested like Bernie?
She was too careful.
It's in Tribune. It's in the Tribune files. They haven't found the picture yet.
She was wearing a Goldwater hat, though.
She's from Park Ridge.
Oh, yeah, Park Ridge. You don't get arrested. Come on.
Yeah, come on.
Please. Eric Adelson and Pat Brady are here. They know politics, so you don't have to. And there's an interesting thing that's gone on, Andrea, that has brought out the majority of the primary voters. And even if it is less than 25 or 30% of the total voting population, it's as different as it's ever been. And that anger seems to be driving the Republican primary voters. Delusional hope seems to be driving the Democratic side.
Well, you know, a lot of the primary voters, it's not just Republicans that are voting for Trump. There's some angry Democrats that are coming over, too.
There's no way to quantify that, though.
No.
I mean, you can quantify it based on survey research and the small percentage.
I mean, but you guys hate polls. You guys both talk about how inaccurate the polling stuff is. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you guys think all of this will drive voters to the primary, to the voting booths on March 15th? I mean, you'll see.
In Illinois, are you talking about?
Yeah, primaries are typically low turnout anyway.
They are.
I mean, it depends on the weather a lot.
I think you've seen higher turnout in the Republican side, not so much in the Democratic side. Now, part of that is skewed because 08 was so big with Obama that everything compared to that ends up falling short, you know. But look, we're in this transitional time, and I think there's tremendous security and anxiety, economic and, you know, militarily and all that. And people, you crave simple answers, right? So then anger and the kind of, you know, crap that Trump is selling becomes much easier fodder. So that's the time we're in.
Here's the thing that we don't know, right? Well, the hope that Bernie Sanders is selling, I'm going to give your kid free college and I'm going to make sure everything else is puppies and kittens, versus the anger on the Republican side, what's going to drive more people to the general?
Right. I will, again, quote President Obama, say I have more faith in the American people that they will come out here and do the right thing, although I said the same thing in 2008 when I was supporting John McCain, so I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen.
Right. No, I get that. But what I'm saying is if that exists in that sample of voters, the far right and the far left, there has to be a sense of that feeling in the moderates as well. I would argue that the Trump thing is pissing off more moderates and independents and may get them off the couch to come out and vote against him.
It happened in Iowa. They had 188,000 people turn out, which was, you know, 20% more than they've ever had. And a lot of the people that I talked to, like our buddy Matt Strawn over there, said a lot of people came out to vote against Trump.
I mean, you could have the reverse effect of 08 with Trump as the nominee, where people come out because not because they're excited, but because they're scared on both sides, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Scared of what's going on, but scared of Trump being president. And you get a whole bunch of people who say, I can't allow that to happen. That's not a great way to conduct your democracy, but
or build a party.
It may be where we are,
or build the party.
Yeah, because it's not just
about
Trump.
Think about this: if it's Trump versus Hillary, you would never have more of a prime example of the problem with how we pick candidates and push candidates to the top. She has zero trustworthiness, and she's not likable. He's eminently dislikable to still way more than half of America. That's the clearest, least worst alternative we've ever seen.
Yeah, it's terrible. And I'd go as far as say he's dangerous, but it does not reflect well in the process. Maybe we need some kind of campaign finance reform. Maybe we need some more restrictions. And I'm not advocating that, but
I am.
It's time that
it's the old line, Steve. You know, the best way to pick a president, everyone who wants the job should be disqualified.
Oh,
and then
true.
You pick from the rest of the population.
I'm not even sure if Trump wants it, though. I'm not convinced he really
wants
it. I don't
think he did in the beginning. I think he's such a narcissistic megalomaniac and other bigger words that I think he does now.
I think, you know what? I got that impression with Bernie. Whenever I see Bernie Sanders and he finishes a speech or a rally, no matter how much support he walks off, and I can't help but think he's thinking, oh, thank God this night's over.
Well, he's you know, he's old.
Well, yeah.
You know, they're all old at this point, but he's old and he's probably tired. But I wonder who's more surprised at this point, Bernie that he's still in or Hillary that Bernie's still in?
Right.
Equal.
Equal. I think. And look, I think I also think Trump is surprised that he's done as well as he had. There was a funny essay in one of the national magazines, kind of the reverse of him saying, I got to get out of this thing. I'm going to go out and say this thing about Mexicans. I'm going to go out and say this thing about Muslims. Mm-hmm. That'll kill me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go out and pick on the Pope. Mm-hmm. And the aide comes back and says, bad news. Your numbers keep going up. Yeah. You know, it's sort of like the producers, right? Springtime for Hitler in
That's
Germany.
That's exactly what it is.
Right?
This is the producers' campaign.
Right? Like, say the most outrageous thing and become more popular.
Right. The fake campaign.
Mel Brooks is actually producing it. That's what we're going to find out. There's nothing that is going to change between now and Super Tuesday that will be outlandish enough to rock the world and mix up on either side. I mean, look, we've seen all the potholes that are out there, and it doesn't seem to do much.
The difference is we're going to see big states voting, and we haven't seen that yet. And so, you know, a different populace is now going to comprise these primary votes on both sides. And we'll see. And I think, you know, Pat knows better than I do, but I think there has been a history in these bigger Republican primaries states to pick more moderate centrist Republicans than the early states.
Yeah, I do think tonight is important to see with the people that are going to challenge Trump what they can actually do against him. I'd be very disappointed if they lay back.
Is Carson going to still be in this thing?
He doesn't know. He just knows he's not asked enough questions.
He actually released a statement this morning saying he's staying in.
Yeah, right.
No matter what.
Right now he's, sell books, right?
Right now he's rehearsing his answer no matter when they go to him. They could go to him first and he'd go, well, I was hoping someone would ask me a question.
Hey, at least he showed up for Megyn Kelly, though. You know, draft affirmant Donald won't take an interview from Megyn Kelly.
No, she's very frightening.
Yeah, I know. She's very brutal.
Before you guys go, you do realize that if Rubio were to win Florida, Kasich were to win Ohio, and Cruz were to win Texas, that's going to be a brokered convention.
That would be a lot of fun. We're going, right?
Yes.
Eric can come as my guest. We'll have
I'd
a lot of fun.
To.
Yeah, that'd be a blast.
We'll be there. And
hello, Cleveland.
And
Rock City. No, that's Detroit.
And Hillary will win South Carolina on Super Tuesday for the Democrats. What's the state to watch?
Well, Super Tuesday. South Carolina Saturday, and then
Saturday,
Super Tuesday's
March 1st.
Coming up. I think some of these Midwest states that are Super Tuesday, I think Minnesota is one that Sanders is really counting on. But I think because it's, again, this SEC primary, I think she's going to expand her delegate lead and really make the Trump camp – God, I keep mixing up these sides, Steve.
Yeah,
make the Sanders campaign seem more like a protest movement than a real threat to her nomination.
So 1 week from today, it could be as big a mix-up as ever, or it could be largely over.
Never seen anything like this.
I you got to go a little longer now on our side. I think it's going to be 4 or 5 weeks before we're going to know. Everybody needs to stay calm. Don't vote for Trump. And the people that are making decisions, they better get on the stick here pretty quick.
Where are the Ides of March, though, right? March 15th is going to be a big day.
Well, I'm more concentrating on Steve's birthday than I am the March 15th primary, because he told me I had to.
Well, listen, it could be the last one. You know, when President Trump shows up, I'm sure I'm going to be in some sort of prison.
Do you think Ryan Seacrest will be a good Supreme Court justice?
Could be positive. I like Judge Judy right now. So,
did you see that poll that came out a couple of months ago that some percentage of college students, like 40%, thought Judge Judy was on the Supreme Court?
Yeah. 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 And the instinct would be to blame the colleges, but I think you got to blame the parents at that point. So minute before 8, thanks to both of you. Thanks to Rick Pearson. Thanks to Senator Kirk, all guests in this hour. We're back after this on 720 WGN.